Welcome to episode number 19 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Darren Roach, who is one of the biggest Kiss fans in the world. We interview someone that is very connected to the music of Kiss since the very start of their career, and that is Mr. Bob Kulick. Bob has been in the industry for 50 years, and he shares some great stories about how he got started until the present day with the release of his first solo album, Skeletons in the Closet, featuring some of the world's best players, including his brother on guitar and bass, Bruce Kulick, who is also a member of Kiss, the lead singer from Twisted Sister, Dee Snider, Vinny Appice, who played drums with Dio and Black Sabbath, and also recorded with John Lennon, Rudy Sarzo on bass, who performed with Quiet Riot, Ozzy Osbourne, and Whitesnake, and the list goes on and on. It's just an amazing album with full of talented musicians. It really is a must-buy album for anyone who likes good rock music, or even anyone that appreciates good music in general. So Bob talks about his connection with Kiss and shares some stories that for the Kiss fans you don't want to miss out on. We also chat about the Kiss Cruise that he just finished performing on with his band, featuring again once his brother Bruce on guitar, our bass player and singer Todd Kearns, and drummer Brent Fritz. So do yourself a favour and check out the YouTube clips of them performing live. It really is incredible, so you won't be disappointed. Now, before we get into the interview, let's take a quick listen to a bit of the first track of Bob's new album, Off Skeletons in the Closet, a song called Rich Man. Thanks for doing this.
No problem, my pleasure. How's it going?
Yeah, good. So I've got myself and my brother here, Darren.
G'day, Bob.
Ah, okay.
Can you...
Darren, how you doing?
All right. Well, thought we'd just start off with how you first started playing guitar, if that's okay.
Of course. A logical question for a guitar player.
That's it.
I was fascinated by the guitar, and when my cousin, who's no longer with us, Judy, showed up at a family function, played acoustic guitar, folk music style. It kind of really impressed me, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to ask her if she could do a couple of lessons for me, which she did, and it kind of opened the door for me to see what the possibilities were, and that kind of set me on the course.
Okay. So how old were you about then?
I probably was 13 or 14. 13, okay. I would say. Somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah. And what was one of the first things you learned?
Just your basic chords attached to folk songs, like If I Had a Hammer or something like that.
Okay.
She was into the folk music scene of the day, so it would have been Peter, Paul, and Mary and Kingston Trio and Joan Baez and stuff like that.
Yep.
But the more important issue was not the what I was playing. It was that my fingers took to moving independently the way a guitar player would have to if you were going to have any feel for this whatsoever, if there was any thing other than a technical teach, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Either somebody has a feel for it or they don't. It's not something that you can learn. So I found out quickly that, well, this was fun. I enjoyed it and my fingers were able to be coordinated enough to move. Playing guitar is part hand-eye coordination. So that was important.
Yeah, for sure. So did you get into the reading at the start or just mainly the chords and X songs and everything?
No, it was just, you know, it was just basically, be able to play C to A minor, D minor to G, and then A minor and an F, and, you know, to be able to know the chords enough to be able to have some rudimentary knowledge of what I was getting myself into.
Yeah.
Then
sure.
Obviously, once I found music that I really wanted to play, then learning those songs became the challenge. And that was where the big learning lesson really came from, playing in top 40 bands, five sets a night, six nights a week, playing, you know, all the popular songs, whether they were R&B songs or blues songs or rock songs or pop songs, whatever they were.
Yeah.
You know, that was really the big teaching device. Having to learn to play all those styles and all those songs taught me everything that I really needed to know to be able to play in any genre, which I think is if you're going to be a real guitar player, you should be able to play with anybody.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention that because I noticed you played with, you know, a few different artists and different styles. So did you just pick that up by yourself or by learning through a teacher?
No, I never really had a professional teacher.
Okay.
My teacher were other musicians that I watched or who showed me, here's how I do that. Oh, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know, as I've done for people or, you know, in the studio, you know, show them this, that, or the other thing, play them a lick and have them mimic it, whatever it is. But yeah, you know, I was somebody who jumped in the pool, shall we say. This was not something that, you know, I did every once in a while. This was, you know, I realized that I was passionate about this. So, you know, I really made it my business to know my business.
Yeah. Oh, you did a great job doing it.
thanks. Well, thank you.
Definitely paid off. So you said you had a cover band going for a few nights a week and everything. And then what was the step after that?
Well, then it was, you know, trying to play with name artists.
Yep.
So, you know, auditioning for LaBelle and stuff like that, where I was able to get a gig that was like a real paying gig that took me on the road. The gig with Long John Baldry, the English blues singer that I got. The gig with Hookfoot that I got. These were all early 70s.
Mm.
So, yeah, I was already setting out on I can actually do this professionally. Wow, I can actually make a couple of bucks doing this. Wow, I could actually be on a tour doing this. It then became a huge, like, what the possibilities were now. Wow, this is, you know, an amazing opportunity to, you know, meet people and further the cause, you know, even if it wasn't playing exactly what I wanted to play.
Yeah. No, good. Well, this is pretty much where I hand over to my brother because he's the, we played, grew up in bands together. He's my brother's drummer, I'm the guitarist.
I can relate to that.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and he's
did
also.
You see the videos of my brother and I playing on the Kiss Cruise?
Oh, absolutely, mate. And we'll be getting to that in just a moment because. You're right.
So
no, not a worry. Sure. So, look, I'm here as the Kiss fan. Adam's the guitarist. So I'll just jump into the Kiss stuff. And for your Aussie fans that aren't familiar, which there wouldn't be too many that aren't, but tell us about your first encounter with Gene and Paul.
Well, that would have been when I auditioned for the band back in the day. You know, they put an ad in the Village Voice in New York, and this was the place where, for instance, a LaBelle gig was advertised that I went and auditioned and got. So, you know, band looking for a lead guitar player went down to their loft, and that was the first time I met them and didn't get the gig, but kept in touch. We'd go to their shows, we'd go hang out with Paul, we'd go to Gene's place. We became friends. So that's how that really started. Was for me auditioning and them like, well, we really love his playing, and then cut to the Kiss Cruise, and there I am back again.
Yeah.
So it's been a kind of a long journey, but here we still are, and that's, I guess, that really tells the story of something that's special.
Fantastic. Now, with Kiss always being image conscious and that playing a major part in everything they did, even when they were planning it early on, did that affect your chances of getting the gig, and what did you actually look like back in 73?
Well, you know, I had hair, but, you know, I think really the real thing for them was that Ace kind of fit the mold of what they were looking for stylistically, as well as his look and, you know, just the whole thing about him. You know, he sang and he had really long hair and he was kind of a rebel, which they kind of needed. Because as much as Gene and Paul, you know, were and still are behaved rock stars, shall we say.
Sure.
You know, they, these people don't destroy rooms or,
yeah,
you know, have addictions of any variety, you know, whereas, you know, Ace was kind of more of a free spirit kind of guy. And I think they felt that this would help their cause and help flesh out the lineup. You know, it's not always all about the playing. It's about the vibe sometimes.
Sure.
And, you know, I think it's probably partially that I wasn't your prototype looking rock star, i.e., you know, what they were looking like or Ace was looking like. But as I told the story on the Kiss Cruise, you know, they showed me a prototype picture of the makeup idea. And rather than saying what I said, which was, you know, yeah, I see David Bowie and a lot of artists wearing makeup, not maybe as much as this, but where they're putting on a show like that. Led Zeppelin, they don't need to do that. If you're great, you agree that you wouldn't need to do this. What I should have said was, wow, what a great idea. That,
yeah.
What do you have in mind for me? Let's go. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, well, that actually leads me into the next thing. At being a friend then, at that time, even not getting the gig, What was it like for you around, say, 1975, 76, watching these guys, your friends, rising to fame, becoming the biggest band in the world and thinking, I missed it by that much?
Well, I never kind of looked at it as I missed it by that much, because the reality was, at that point, after playing on some of their stuff and them getting, you know, into what I was capable of, you know, hanging out with me and being a friend, you know, starting to write some songs, it became more than just an acquaintance. And in that way, it was just like they were very supportive of my career, you know, and turned me on to other artists. For instance, you know, Gene introduced me to Diana Ross. That's how I wound up playing with Diana Ross.
Great.
You know, Paul was very supportive of the band that I had, Balance, back in the day. He was friends with Pepe the singer, and he was introduced to Doug, and, you know, he was like, well, these guys are great, you should do this. It was more that they were my friends, and, you know, so I'd go over to Paul's place, and he'd get his Porsche out, and we'd go for a drive to a club, and, you know, it would be like I'm hanging out with a rock star. But it was more than that, because we were friends, and we would talk about music all the time, we'd hang out and play guitar all the time, you know, and I spent some time with Gene as well. So it was just, you know, one of those. They were stars, but because they wore the makeup and all of that, a lot of people didn't know, unless, you know, we'd go out somewhere when it would be a big deal with somebody. We'd go, isn't that one of the guys in Kiss? And, you know, so people really knew what they looked like.
Fantastic. So that leads us to, I guess, your first recording with the band, with the second side of Alive 2. If you could tell us a bit about that.
Well, basically, you know, Paul called me one day and was just like, Gene and I were talking and we kind of need a favor. What do you need? It's like, well, we have a deadline on this record and we have some stuff that we need some solos on, and Ace has kind of been dragging his heels, and, you know, we were wondering if you could come in and ghost some solos for us. I'm like, sure, absolutely, no problem. So I went down to Electric Lady where they were recording, and Eddie Kramer was working with them at the time, you know, the guy who worked with Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix. So
sure.
He got me an amazing guitar sound.
Awesome.
And, you know, I was ready to embark upon Rockin' in the USA and Larger Than Life and All American Man, you know, and was successful in playing stuff that sort of seemed like Ace, which was, you know, kind of the, well, we wanted it to sound like Ace as much as possible, but not being Ace, it didn't sound exactly like Ace. But, you know, lead guitar is lead guitar, and I don't think a lot of people knew or cared, you know, since no fuss was made of it. You know, they paid me, and, you know, it was like, it was, for me, it was like, now they know what they would have sounded like with me.
Yeah, actually.
So it was a mission accomplished.
I'd recently heard an interview you did with Eddie Trunk, where he was talking about it, saying, you know, in hindsight, he was 12 years old, and him and his friends knew, oh, there's no way that's Ace, we didn't know. And you know what, I don't think, Eddie, much respect to him, I don't think he give you your just desserts there, because I remember being a young kid and listening to it in my group of friends, it was never ever questioned that, hang on, that's not Ace playing. I think it's easy to look back
and
say
that. Yeah, absolutely. It was certainly in the ballpark. You know, Ed has more trained ears, you know, maybe that others, and would have noticed a few of the nuances that Ace wouldn't have played, but that's not to say he couldn't have played that.
Sure.
Or wouldn't have played that. And as the point that I made on that interview that I'll make to you as well, that I was not the first person to do ghost guitar for somebody. See Eric Clapton playing with the Beatles on While My Guitar Gently Weeps. That's not George Harrison.
Right.
That's Eric Clapton. Hmm. So if Eric Clapton could play with the Beatles, I can play with Kiss.
Absolutely.
There you have it.
And what a great job you did too.
Thanks very much.
And look, were you ever considered to be a full-time replacement for Ace when he left in 82?
Oh, it was always the joke at the office, you know, like, so we'll get you a wig, or, you know, me, I got an idea. What's that? So regarding my makeup, I'll be Ming the Merciless with Flash Gordon. Very funny, Bob. You know, I'll have like a, you know, that this little helmet thing, yeah. And I have the big collar up in the back, and I can make the Ming the Merciless hand thing and all of that. Very funny, Bob, they would say.
That's it.
You know, but, you know, it was like, you know, plus we were friends, and they felt comfortable with me, and because I played on a few of the things, and the recordings worked out great. I wrote something with Gene that was on one of their records that worked out. So, you know, it would have been the expedient, easy thing to do. Unfortunately, by that point, for me, the ship had already sailed. People already knew who I was. I couldn't all of a sudden become a guy in makeup with another persona and another name with a wig. I just couldn't do it.
Sure.
So, you know, but I did know somebody who could do it. And, you know, I vociferously suggested my brother over and over, despite them taking Benny Vincent and Mark St. John. I made it clear to them, Bruce is sort of a carbon copy of me and some. He's tall, he's got long hair, he qualifies. And I remember Gene saying once to me, he's got a beard. I'm like, he can shave. You know, so finally when, you know, the call came from Paul, you know, I was, spit it out. So you got Bruce's number. We're thinking of calling him because we're having a problem with Mark. Oh, finally. Well, here's the number. Let me know how this works out. I'm in London with Meatloaf. My brother calls me like an hour later. Guess who called me? I'm like, he didn't tell you I gave him the number? That you know, so next thing I know, he's coming over to England to play with Kiss. Fantastic. And we went to the show to see them. And it was just, you know, one of those crazy funny moments. It's just like having led him down the path to this. Here you go. You know, and then to see him get up there and do that, I kind of felt like, you know, my fate was to play with them in this capacity. His fate was to play with them in that capacity.
Sure.
You know, so it is what it is. You know, I did plenty of gigs that he didn't do. So it was not a competition. It was a congratulations to my brother for getting a cherry gig.
Well, speaking of something that Bruce didn't do, one of my favorite albums of all time would have to be Paul's solo album. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, at one point Paul was like, so we're all going to do solo records. I was just like, yeah, perfect, you know, might as well, you know, and they were selling everything, you know, that they were doing, so it made sense. That's why everybody could get it out of the system, so to speak. You know, obviously Paul's was more the sort of like Kiss record, didn't try to do anything that was totally different. We had fun, you know, he asked me to suggest the bass player, which I did. Steve Buslow, great bass player, the guy that I was working with Meatloaf. I worked with him with Michael Bolton. A great bass player and still a friend. We still keep in touch. And the guy was a tremendous musician, took music really seriously. So Paul was really happy. Wow, a great bass player. So when you hear that, dude, you get the guy on the goodbye.
Yeah.
That's Steve Buslow.
Fantastic.
Nobody told him to play that. That's Steve Buslow. So this guy was very creative. Paul got Richie from Piper.
Yes.
Richie Fontana.
Yes.
And the four of us together, you know, down at Electric Ladies, you know, just Paul would show us the song and we learned the song and play it. It was done very organically, and then we'd overdub some stuff. Paul would sing, you know, it was done as a fun project. There was never any pressure, any rush, any, you know, thing that was just not fun. We just, you know, so tomorrow, what time do you want to do this? Like, 9 o'clock. All right, we'll show up around 9. We'll have some fun. That's the way it was. It wasn't like a serious session with a producer. All right, today we're going to, it wasn't like that at all. It was just easy peasy.
Sure.
And, you know, the songs are great. I remember, you know, working on Tonight You Belong to Me. I was just like, this is such a great song.
It sure is.
You know, I remember doing the solo on that. And it was just like, that's so great.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm really happy that this is what popped out of me. You know, it's easy when you're having fun. It's easy when you're relaxed and your soul opens up and you just, you know, if it's not good, you laugh and do it again. You know, so there was no pressure in this gig. Whereas, you know, lots of other stuff that I did with them, there was some pressure, whereas this was one of the easiest gigs, Paul's record.
Okay.
It was only Paul to please. There wasn't Paul and Gene to please, or Paul and Gene and Eddie Kramer, or having to be like Ace or something like that. You know, this I could be myself without any issue of who am I tonight?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there were times where Paul would like something I played and Gene didn't like it, or vice versa. There were times when we put, well, you like the front half and you like the back half. Why don't we just put them together and there's your solo? You know, I mean, you know, it was sometimes difficult to please both of them, but Paul's record was easy in that I only really had to please him. And since we were like a guitar team, you know, we played great together right from the beginning, you know. Like when I did his Paul's tour in 89, it was just like, it was just easy. We just were able to just lock in and play together. You know, we were friends, so it was easy. We were the same mindset, same influences, you know, just made it easy.
It would have been great to finally play on stage, as you mentioned, in 1989 as part of Paul's solo tour.
Yeah, it was definitely a charge, you know, thinking, oh, well, I'll never play these songs live. And then now we're playing them live. And I'm just like, wow, I get to dish out my own solo. That was a lot of fun. And that was a really great band as well, you know, with Eric on drums. And who knew at the time that he would wind up being in Kiss? Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. Nobody knew that. But, you know, I remember I was lobbying for Chuck Berge, who was the drummer. I was working with Meatloaf and Skull, and Chuck's a monster drummer, you know, went on to play with, and still playing with Billy Joel.
Okay.
The guy's a tremendous drummer. But Eric Singer showed up that day at rehearsal because Paul wanted to check him out. And I remember Paul saying to me, so do we still want to check out Chuck Berge? I was like, no, I think he found the guy. Because he just, you know, he was just perfect.
Yeah.
He was just like, you know, he had the look. He had everything going for him. He had the attitude. And I could see that Paul really liked him. So, you know, this was kind of like part of Eric's fate. Paul Stanley's tour. And then I actually joined Kiss. So there's that, you know.
Terrific. Now, I don't know if you can see us or not, Bob. Can you? Have you got vision of us?
I do. I see you in the upper right corner here. Yeah. You're in a little circle here.
There you go. That brings us to the next.
Oh, so there's yes, our wonderful Kiss Killers.
Kiss Killers. I was just going to say, did you actually have a hand in the songwriting?
No, I didn't write any of the songs on this. Didn't co-write any of the songs. It was strictly, again, we need some solos. Okay, coming to the rescue. Here's some solos, you know.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the wonderful Kiss cruise that we're all very excited about down here, as I'm sure many Kiss fans around the world are. After seeing it on YouTube, you know, there's some good video actually out there of it, and I was quite surprised with the sound. I thought being on a ship in the middle of the ocean, the sound over YouTube was quite good. But
the sound of some of these people's cell phones, is, I don't know how that's possible. I'm listening to, you know, on headphones. I'm like, you can hear the low end, and it's not distorted. I'm like, how is that possible?
It's amazing. It really is.
It's amazing, but I guess that magic needed to be captured, and somehow it was. We stupidly made no arrangement to video or anything, figuring that this will be the usual. Somebody will get it, and we'll be able to see it at some point down the road. Didn't know it was going to turn into what it turned into, but incredibly gratifying to see a song like Tough Love, not an easy song to play. There it is. Perfect.
Yeah.
There's not a mistake on it. What we did was special in that these were songs that the fans really wanted to hear. So the fact that we knew that and were able to put this together and have a great singer like Todd Kearns from Slash's band.
He's fantastic.
A tremendous artist in and of himself. Doesn't need Slash or anybody else. This guy is the real deal.
Mm.
As you can see on that video. And Brent Fitz, who's a superstar drummer. I mean, this guy is one of my favorite people now. I mean, he's so into what he does. It's such a joy to be around him. As I said to him on the phone, you know, playing with you, it's like you almost take you for granted because you're solid as a rock. I never even have to look. Like, does he know where he's going? Does he know the ending's coming up? Yeah, he knows exactly where he is. You know, so very lucky to have these guys to play with. And, you know, it was a very inspiring thing for Bruce and I to get up there and play together, having not done this very much. And under these circumstances, to a huge crowd like that, you know, I guess you could say we rose to the occasion, and certainly one of the most memorable nights of my career.
Yeah, absolutely, you rose to the occasion. And I bet you made your mother proud.
She was indeed. You know, Bruce was able to show her the you know, some of the video and some of the photos that my girlfriend Julie took, and she was kind of blown away. You know, it's just like, wow, look at this. You know, so that's a nice perk of this.
Sure.
We had no idea that it was going to turn into, you know, people lavishing all this praise on us, but I understand it. And you know, the rest of the time on the cruise was amazing. We had a blast. My girlfriend and I had just a great time. She got some amazing pictures of me and Mexico. And, you know, it was an experience of a lifetime to have all those fans come up to me just walking around the boat, you know, and just saying how much they love what we did and all that. It was extremely rewarding on every level.
Yeah, I hope to get to one of those cruises one day. They look like a lot of fun.
I had no idea what to expect, never having been on a cruise, but you know, I mean, I could see if the weather were bad, that it might not be a great experience.
Yeah.
Other than that, sign me up for the next one. I'm ready to go. It was awesome. Unbelievably great. That's like a city on there. You know, we were shooting, we were playing basketball and hitting golf balls. You know, it's hilarious to have everything there. Casinos and restaurants for days. It's just a floating city. But that stage for that night, the music gods were with us. You know, the weather was all right enough to play out there. Everybody was comfortable. It sounded great.
Yeah.
Didn't really ever think I was on a boat. Those fans are such incredible fans.
Yeah.
People crying in the crowd and going crazy. It was quite a sight, I got to be honest.
Do you think it'll ever happen again?
I sure hope so. We'll see what fate has in store. I've learned that I'm not in charge, that I let the music gods or whoever it is that is in charge, you know, plot the course, you know, and I'll just, you know, get on the boat or whatever it is when required. You know, I'm ready to play. Really found that player in myself again doing this. You know, there were a few of the solos that I really always have to stay true to what they are, because that's what people want to hear and that's what they're used to hearing and that's the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
But there are other places in the show where I just like, okay, just play it. And that was very rewarding, to just be able to still be able to just like go for it and play and be inspired and hit a home run, you know, feel so good about it. There were so many Australian people there, you know. I've been to Australia 3 times. And they were one of the most vociferous, loud contingents, always, you know, coming over to me and always, you know, saying stuff. And I'm hoping that Bruce and I, with Todd and Brent, can come over and do a tour. It'd be great.
Well, you just answered my next question, and we really hope you do, because there's a lot of Aussie fans that would just, well, as you said yourself, you spoke to someone on the ship, and we can't wait. If that happens, it'd be fantastic.
Well, you know, again, as I was saying to people on the ship, that, you know, music business is still a business of supply and demand. You know, my girlfriend and I went to see Guns N' Roses last night. The audience still demands to see this band, even though they've seen them now several times. They still want to see it. So if people want to see us, tell somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, like on the boat, you know, when they ask, well, who'd you like to see next year? Write it down, right? What you'd like to see. So it's the same with a lot of this, that, you know, promoters and booking agents, you know, send them an email.
Sure.
It'd be great to have this band. It can't hurt, that's for sure. But, you know, I can't say, you know, I'm burning up the phone lines trying to get us gigs. There are things that are happening, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And when was the last time you were in Australia?
Last time I was in Australia was with Meat Loaf. So I did 2 tours with Meat Loaf and 1 with Alice Cooper. Those were the 3 times I was there. And that was back in the 80s, the last time.
Now, has anybody, well, I'm sure you've heard, but has anybody told you about Meat Loaf's performance at the AFL football grand final here?
Oh, yeah, Paul Stanley mentioned it to me.
Oh, really?
Don the Crew.
Oh, you've got to YouTube it, Bob. You've got to check it out on YouTube. It is just astonishing how bad someone could be. He blamed the monitors, but no other band seemed to have problems with it. But it's something to see. It's, you know, 100,000 people.
You know, I've seen it in person on some of the tours where there were some issues or problems or whatever, you know. You know, people think it's easy to get up and sing. It's really not. And, you know, while I'll laugh like the next person, the reality is that if it was easy, anybody could do it.
Yeah.
And put it into a circumstance where somebody, as people get older, especially their vocal cords, this is a physical thing. It's not like my fingers, where keep practicing and you'll get those tour calluses on. You know what I'm saying? It's a little different. Somebody singing, like Axl Rose last night, we have to give him credit. I mean, the guy sang his ass off.
Oh, right.
You know, he totally sang his ass off. And it's just like, gee, you know, you got to give him credit. I'm not sure if they were tuned down or not, but regardless of where they were on the totem pole of tuning, he was in tune and totally dishing it out. And, you know, I thought Paul did a really great job at the show that I saw. And, you know, the band, they sounded great. So, you know, it's been a real great couple of weeks of music. Guns N' Roses, Kiss, and playing with my brother. It's been like a kind of special time. I kind of really feel empowered by all of it.
Yeah. And we actually lost one of the great Aussie rhythm guitarists overnight, unfortunately, in Malcolm Young.
Yeah, it's, you know, really sad. I posted online about it. It's, you know, it's a huge loss. He touched so many people. That band was one of the biggest bands ever.
Mm.
And, you know, he'll be missed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
Yeah,
it's... You know, it's just really sad. Words can't say feelings. Words can't describe what one feels in one's soul to reach out for somebody who made so many people happy, who helped to distract people from their misery and horror, you know, which is what music does to a large extent.
Yeah.
Lifts people's spirits, distracts them from other stuff that they don't want to think about. People who do that, you know, either on a record or live, is one of the blessings of my life, as I know it was for him.
Yeah.
You know, I may rest in peace and condolences to the family.
Yeah,
know,
absolutely.
There's some beyond great, saying anything.
Yeah, there's some great tributes happening, as you'd imagine, in Australia in particular, where we will always claim them as an Aussie band, and there's a lot of tributes on the radio stations.
Well deserved.
So, yeah, absolutely. Well, Bob, that's pretty much the end of my Kiss questions. I'm going to turn over to Adam for the guitar questions, but as a fan, I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done and your contributions with Kiss and some memorable songs that will live with us forever, and we do hope to see you in Australia someday.
Great, thank you so much.
Here's Adam.
Okay. Now I just want to get back into the new album, if we can, Skeletons in the Closet.
Sure, so we could talk about that. It seems like a appropriate subject, you know, especially since the single is just being released here, Rich Man, which features Todd Kearns on vocals. Gee, what a amazing twist of fate.
It is. Brent Fitz is
on the record as well, as is my brother. So, and Eric Singer, so, you know, plus Dee Snider and Rob McCauley and Rudy Sarzo and Frankie Benali and Vinny Appice and all the rest on Gilligan's Island here. You know, very lucky to have, you know, my all-star cast, Bob's solo record with 23 guest artists. You know, very lucky. I feel really blessed to be able to get up and play with my brother and to have a record like this available. You know, this is like a great period of time for me in my life right now. I really feel, like I said, you know, I really feel like there's an opportunity for people to check out my music and see me play, and they've done both.
Yeah.
You know, I had a bunch of CDs on the boat, and they all sold.
Oh, wow.
Every one of them.
Well, that's a great album.
Very encouraging.
Thank you very much.
Really tried to make something special, really concentrated on the songs and getting some great singers, Andrew Freeman and Vic Wright and all these guys, Dee Snider and Robin and everybody. I mean, it's the top of the food chain.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Dave Isley and, you know, on those three songs, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yep.
So, you know, really lucky. And, you know, maybe 20 years ago it would have been a hit record. Now it is what it is, and I'm just hoping that the fans check it out, because I think they'll find some redeeming social value in there.
Oh, definitely. Cool. So it's the first five songs are the new ones, aren't they?
Yeah, the new ones, you know, again, I think the retrospective part of the CD stands up, but the new songs, obviously, they're the new songs.
Yep.
I'm more passionate about that, having my co-producer, Bobby Ferrari, having somebody who really was able to make them sound modern, was able to add ear candy and stuff on there, those intros and the outros and the stuff that we did, you know, to me really made it more than just, here's another song or... you know, whatever, you know, I really tried to make them as special as possible. And having a song like London, you know, with all the help that I got from Doug Katsaris, who co-wrote those songs with me and my former Balance bandmate, I'm really proud of those songs. And at the end of the day, that's what people are going to hum or sing, not the guitar solos, they're going to hum and sing the songs. So, you know, I feel really good in that area of, you know, the competition, that I got some good songs to compete with. I mean, that song in itself, like I said, London, just the way Dee sings it as well. It's, he's a great singer, you know, one of my favorite singers. Lucky enough to, you know, Meatloaf in his prime, Paul Stanley in his prime, Dee Snider in his prime. I'm able to work with some of the great singers and, you know, Glenn Hughes and people like that, Devin Townsend, Robin Zander on some of the records that I produced. Lemmy, of course, you know, a great singer in that the guy was able to, like Mick Jagger, not somebody with a voice that you go, oh, it's the user-friendly voice for everybody. No, but a voice that could sell a lyric, voice that could affect somebody. You know, so you know, I've been really lucky with that. And like I said, you know, couldn't be happier with the people that are on my record. So
yeah, and then also having Bruce playing bass on it too sounds great as well.
Sure, and you know, since he co-wrote the song, you know, it seemed like a good little gimmick, and he played guitar on Guitar Commando, so he's also on there as a guitar player. So on there was a writer and there's a bass player and a guitar player. You know, I think I might as well take advantage of my brother's super talent, which he is. He's a super talent.
Yeah, I never knew. I mean, you can tell sometimes when people play bass, they're a guitarist. But to hear his track without listening to it, you think, oh, well, that's a really good bass player.
He's a great bass player.
Yeah.
Originally, he was the bass player. You know, it's just like, okay, first he learned guitar and then we moved him to bass. But then he was like, man, it's too restrictive. I'm like, I get it.
Yeah. And also the song "You're Not Before You," also with Bruce, it's got the drop tuning. Is that right?
Yes, it's E flat tuning with the E flat tuned down a full step, the low E string.
Yep, yep, Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a great little intro, and you got your little pinch harmonics, which I always find easier with the drop tuning.
Yeah, you know, it's just a tuning configuration that I used on this, the London chords. You know, you can turn those into piano chords by changing the bass note. And that's what London really is that those chords are piano chords.
Yep.
Just played with that drop tuning, fretting those strings, that's what you get. Mm. So it's something that I found that I really liked that kind of, I'm not saying it's unique, but it's unique.
Oh, it is, yeah, it is for sure. I mean, there's a lot of good riffs on there. Even with Goldfinger, I found the more of the chromatic rundowns.
I like reinventing songs that are not rock or metal songs.
Mm.
Like the Sinatra CD I produced, or Dee Snider's Broadway show tune record, where, you know, here's Sweeney Todd played by a rock band with a frame that, what am I listening to? Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I hear it now. Yeah, you know, so here to be able to take Goldfinger, one of my favorite James Bond songs, bam, bam, that beginning always killed me. I was just like, ah, that is so great.
Yeah.
To be able to play that on guitars and have that transposed with Vic doing that nasty vocal on there. It was so much fun to do.
Mm.
You know, I love the way that thing turned out. It was the first thing that I did with Bobby Ferrari at the studio. And listen to what that thing sounds like. It's massive.
Yeah, you know,
Scotty Coogan and Bobby himself playing bass on that, with Doug's keyboard subtly in there, with Vic's vocal and my attack mode guitar on that. It was fun.
Mm.
I hope people get it.
And with the song India, now when you wrote, did you write that one by yourself or co-wrote?
Well, Dave wrote the melody and lyrics. Dave, you know, wrote the SpongeBob song Sweet Victory with me.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he's an A songwriter, an A singer.
Yeah.
You know, we were the guys that did the SpongeBob song Sweet Victory. This was done around that same period of time.
Oh, right.
So we had a real good writing vibe. Like, here's the track. He was able to come up with this concept and the melodies and, you know, his lyrics again. He's another one of these guys who should be a superstar or legend, you know, and he is in my book.
Yeah, I mean, to listen to it, you can sort of hear the flavor of India, you know, with the scales you use.
Yeah, and then using that Carl Sitar to give it that sonic flavor was one of the good things about that recording. Like the Beatles, try to find an instrument that can put a stamp on it.
Yeah.
That one has it.
Going over to Guitar Commandos with your brother. How fun was that one to play?
A fun ditty that I wrote with a good friend of mine back in the day, John Siegler, who, thanks to the record, we're back in touch again. A guy who played bass with Todd Rundgren, Utopia, Hall & Oates. I mean, his track record is another one who's like, the guy should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He co-wrote that song with me. And it still stands up. People go, you know, I really like Guitar Commandos. I'm like, what about London and, you know, Richmond? You know, it's just like... It's music. It's a matter of personal opinion and taste. Everybody's allowed to have their favorites.
Yeah.
Pick the one you like. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, the whole album's, you can't really pick a favorite.
You try for that, but, you know, can't please everybody, and I didn't try to.
Yeah.
You know, people always said to me, why don't you make a record like a Kiss record? I'm like, it's not me. I got to be me. You know, so this is what me turned out. You know?
I think the closest one to probably a Kiss song would be Can't Stop the Rock, for me anyway.
Yeah,
to
people
listen
have
to.
Said that to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that somebody could say that, totally, yeah.
Oh, that's good. So it's not just me then.
Not just you though, no.
Yeah.
You can't stop the rock from rolling.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything else on the album that you want to talk about, to let people know about?
Yeah, you know, again, I would just, you know, reinforce that it's a virtual who's who of the metal rock world, at least in, you know, my world. Mm. So people will get to hear a whole bunch of, you know, different drummers and bass players and singers. And, you know, I think that's part of what this is. You know, it was kind of an opportunity for me to branch out and play with some different people and showcase, you know, them as well as me. Yeah. And I've never been a selfish person. So, you know, I think this is a great chance to hear some of your favorite players playing along with me, you know, with some of these really cool tunes that I feel should be appealing to the audience. If you like what I do, then you should like this, hopefully, you know. So thankful for the opportunity to finally have it out.
Yeah.
Out and off my chest, so to speak. Do you ever put out a record? Yes. Rather than, well, no, not really, you know. So again, super thanks to Julie Bergones, my girlfriend, for pushing me to do this, which I really needed some push to, you know, do this, which I'm overjoyed that it turned out like it has.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, and I know Bruce is pretty busy at the moment, so would there be any chance that you guys would tour with this as well?
I can't say no to anything. We'll just have to see what fate has in store. You know,
we're
open to, you know, making music, and let's see how that's going to work in the future.
Yep, not fair enough. That's great.
Appreciate all your diligent questions here. It was quite a good interview.
No problem at all. All right.
Well,
thanks very much
again.
Out,
Adam.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No.
And brothers to brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
No worries.
Right, keep in touch. Yep. Right. When you have it done and all of that.
For sure. Okay, thanks, Bob.
All right.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
It was a pleasure, Bob. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye, mate.
I just want to announce I am giving everyone 1 month free access to my closed Facebook group, Become a Guitarist Today. So in this group, you'll be able to ask free weekly questions. You can request songs or techniques to learn, ask any questions to do with guitar playing or the artists that I've interviewed on the podcast. I'll be doing some videos of guitar techniques and different songs that people request. So it really is like having guitar lessons, but for free for 1 month. So that way, once you do try it, you can see what it's all about before paying for any of the other packages. So the packages go like this. Package number one, you pay $2.50 and you get access to the group for 2 months. So don't forget, the first month is free. And then for another 2 months, for only $2.50. Then package number two, after your free first month, pay another $5. And you can get access to the group for 6 months. Package number three, pay $10 and get access to the group for 1 year. And you'll also receive a copy of my band Busted Up's CD called Travelin' Man. Then the final package, package number four, is the full membership. So this is a bargain. So pay only $20, receive my book, Become a Guitarist Today, which has been selling for $15 to $20. You'll also receive a lifetime full of access to the group, Become a Guitarist Today, on Facebook. And you'll also receive a copy of my band, Busted Up CD, Travelin' Man. And for this, you're only getting for $20. And don't forget, the first month is free, so check it out, make sure it's what you like. And if you like it, sign up for one of the packages, and there we go. Thanks again to Bob and my brother Darren for co-hosting this episode. Also, a special thanks to Julie, Bob's girlfriend, for giving him that little bit of a push for doing the new album, and also for the great photos from the Kiss Cruise. So join me next week for my interview with Leon Todd from the band Ragdoll. Until then, keep jamming.